Thank you, Diana. Thank you, Anselm. Thank you all for coming, especially because the competition is harsh with the sun outside. So we call our age the information age. Bill Gates talks about digital nervous systems. We tend to describe the internet as if it were a sentient being endowed with agency. Our heteroaffective devices double as control mechanisms whilst curating our browsing activities. Social media puts the user's sensory system into a direct feedback loop with their interface. The physical body is treated as a body of data to be read by biometrics. Our material objects are permeated by information flows from the DNA code to financial algorithms, and we fantasize about immersive environments in which our neural activities would be directly linked onto networks. Within this planetary fusion of surveillance and spectacle, communication is a source of control. This is also what we call big data. As Jonathan Crary noted, within our media ecology, the screen is both the object of attention and the object capable of monitoring, recording, and cross-referencing attentive behavior, end quote. This nexus of communication and control, which is by now painstakingly explicit, was first articulated by cybernetics and information theory. Cybernetics is a science of prediction. It models future actions based on past behavior, much like the NSA, credit rating agencies, or health insurance providers. For cybernetics, control also means prediction. As such, the theory implies a model of temporality within which the past is a standing reserve of information waiting to be mined. As several authors have noted, within predictive models, time is irreversible, but not necessarily progressive, which makes it difficult to reconcile the body politic with the novel bodies of data that populate our technosphere. By literally conflating the nervous system with financial, social, and political systems, cybernetics was also the first discipline to correlate neural nets and computer networks, confounding, therefore, the meaning of information and life. These are the epistemic materials from which what Mackenzie Ward calls the entertainment industrial complex is made of. And we will briefly try to narrate their prehistory, starting with behaviorism, the theory from which cybernetics borrowed its physiology. When, in 1913, John B. Watson gave his inaugural address at Columbia University, Psychology as the Behaviorist Views It, he described psychology as a discipline whose theoretical goal is the prediction and control of behavior. The concept of control in the life sciences emerged out of the Victorian obsession with order. In a society shaped by glaring asymmetries and uneven development, the social anxieties associated with economic insecurity were swiftly codified into a code of conduct, whilst the newly found habits of hygiene were extrapolated from medicine to morals. Behaviorism shares with eugenics an excessive preoccupation with proficiency and the need to control potential deviations. Watson, for instance, was convinced that thumb-sucking would breed masturbators. But the fixation with order extends much farther than biology. For Erwin Schrödinger, for instance, life was synonymous with order and entropy a measure of death or disorder. All disciplinary fields that emerged in the early 20th century, from behaviorism to molecular biology and cybernetics, revolve around the same central metaphor. Order is identical with life. Watson's straightforward characterization of man as a machine appealed to an emergent technocracy because it promised to prevent social tensions from taking a political form. Watson's methodology, as he explicitly stated, was strictly non-political, which is not to say that he would forsake regimentation. Preemptive psychological testing would detect any inklings of conduct deviation, emotional upsets, and standardized sex reactions or truancy, and warrant a process of reconditioning to purge unsocial ways of behaving. Strongly influenced by Ivan Pavlov's study of conditioned reflexes, Watson aimed to anchor psychology firmly in the field of the natural sciences, abandoning speculation in favor of the experimental method. By black-boxing mentation or internal states, behaviorism could operate on observable behavior alone, creating a psychology completely devoid of subjectivity. Following Watson's lead, American psychologists, and here I'm quote John Mills, began to treat all forms of learning as skills, from maze running in rats to the growth of a personality pattern, end quote. For the behaviorist movement, both animal and human behavior could be entirely explained in terms of reflexes, stimulus-response associations, and the effects of reinforcing agents upon them. Boris Friedrich Skinner, Watson's follower, researched how specific external stimuli affected learning using a method that he termed operant conditioning. Like Watson's, Skinner's method blackboxes the animal internal states to operate on observable behavior alone. From this perspective, an animal is just like a machine because it can be made to behave like a machine. But this equivalence also invites its reversal. Producing an identical type of behavior could also be construed as creating an identical being. Behaviorism and cybernetics crossed paths in more ways than one. During World War II, both Norbert Wiener and B.F. Skinner worked on parallel research projects for the U.S. military. B.F. Skinner was actually working on a pigeon-guided missile that he named Project Pigeon and later renamed Project Orcon because for organic control, because he complained that nobody was taking it seriously. Together with engineer Julian Bigelow, Wiener was attempting to develop the anti-aircraft predictor, AA predictor, a machine meant to anticipate the trajectory of enemy planes. Their project built on the assumption that human behavior could be statistically modeled. In order to do this, Wiener's team tried to simulate the four different types of trajectories that a plane could take in its attempt to escape artillery fire with the help of a differential analyzer. To quote Peter Galison, here was a problem that was simultaneously physical and physiological. The pilot, flying amidst the explosion of flak, the turbulence of air, and the sweep of searchlights, trying to guide an airplane to a target. Wiener was quick to observe that, under the strain of combat conditions, human behavior is easy to scale down to a limited number of reflex reactions. The pilot's evasion techniques, he concluded, would follow the same feedback principles that regulated the actions of servo mechanisms. In other words, human behavioral patterns were analogous to servomechanical patterns. Thus, biological systems could be construed as being functionally similar and informationally equivalent to mechanical ones, an idea Wiener would swiftly extrapolate into a more general physiological theory. So though his studies emerged out of this work in engineering, as George Stibitz immediately noted, and I quote a letter that he wrote at the time, the Wiener predictor is based on good behaviorist ideas, since it tries to predict the future actions of an organism, not by studying the structure of the organism, but by studying the past behavior of the organism. Feedback, in Wiener's definition, is the property of being able to adjust future conduct by past performance. Much the same as behaviorism, cybernetics is also predicted on input and output analysis. Skinner's description of operant behavior as a repertoire of possible actions, some of which are selected by reinforcement, is similar to Wiener's description of informational loops in which negative feedback corrects the input signal. Behaviorism, just like cybernetics, is based on a recursive, feedback obviously, model, which is known in biology as reinforcement. To boot, the connection between control actions, which is defined as actions taken in order to achieve goals, and communication, which is defined as the information flow between the actor and the environment, was already implicit in the behaviorist experiments, and Wiener also adopted the functional analysis that accompanies behaviorism, dealing with observable behavior alone and treating all behavior as intrinsically goal-oriented and/or purposeful. So in cybernetic terms, a frog aiming at a fly and the target-seeking missile are both described as teleological mechanisms because they both gather information in order to readjust their course of action. A dog and a thermostat are both described as homeostatic mechanisms. They both maintain balance by adjusting their internal states to environmental changes. The thermostat switches heaters on and off in response to the output of a temperature sensor, and the dog pants to cool down. But this analogy also carries the implication that electronic circuitry is identical to living tissue. and that agency and volition can be imputed to non-organic entities. In Wiener's words, the nervous system and the automatic machine are fundamentally alike in that they are devices which make decisions on the basis of decisions they made in the past. In 1943, the AA predictor was abandoned as the National Defense Research Committee concentrated on the more successful M9, the gun director that Parkinson, Lovell, Blackman, and Bowden Shannon had been developing at Bell Labs. A strategic failure, the AA predictor could have ended up in the dustbin of military history had the encounter with physiology not proven decisive in Wiener's description of man-machine interactions as a unified equation. This description was what he went on to develop, both as a mathematical model and as a multidimensional rhetorical strategy. That same year, together with Julian Bigelow and Arturo Rosenbluth, Wiener published the paper which became known as the Cybernetic Manifesto, Behavior, Purpose, and Teleology. In order to establish itself as a meta-discipline, cybernetics begins by instituting an operational dichotomy between system and environment. This dichotomy, in turn, gives rise to the concept of information as that what the system extracts from its environment. From this perspective, the problem of anti-aircraft artillery is treated as a question of communication. The pilot and the anti-aircraft gun are described within a feedback loop, adjusting their behavior in response to each other's actions. Information, heretofore a concept with a vague meaning, begins thus to be described as a statistical property exacted by the mathematical analysis of a time series. Simply put, this is what cybernetics is: statistical analysis applied to engineering. But by suggesting that everything in the universe... and I quote Slava Gerovich here, but by suggesting that everything in the universe can be modeled into a system of information, cybernetics also entailed a powerful metaphysics, whose essence, in spite of all the ensuing debates, always remained elusive, end quote. Information is information, Wiener argued, not matter nor energy. Information has no dimension nor materiality. Wiener thought of information as representing a choice, and he specifically said the fundamental element of the message is the decision. Decisions produce information. This description aligns itself with Claude Shannon's definition of information as a probability function. And abstractly, information could be thought of as the resolution of uncertainty, which leads us to a further analogy between information and order, or information and pattern. Shannon also distinguishes between message and signal. A signal is what is sent through a communication channel. A message is what is successfully decoded on the other end. Information is thus instantiated as code. The importance of the concept of code was conspicuously derived from the war efforts to encode and decode military messages. But for cybernetics, the multivalence of this term extends beyond the technological field to include biological and philosophical registers. Claude Shannon, a cryptologist, had also extrapolated the code metaphor to encompass all human communication. And like Wiener, he began to employ the concept of entropy in a broader sense, as a measure of uncertainty. Wiener would also describe the message as a form of organization, stating that information is the opposite of entropy. At length, several fields of research began to coalesce around the core concepts cybernetics had set forth, namely, information theory, computer science, molecular biology, and the novel domain of artificial neural networks. In 1943, Warren McCulloch and Walter Pitts published a paper titled A Logical Calculus of Ideas Immanent in Nervous Activities. I believe this is part of the exhibition, right? Yes. And it was also part of the talk that Orit Alpern gave some weeks ago. I wasn't here, but I saw it in the catalog. So, the opening sentence states... It's not in the catalog? Doch. Yes. It is in the catalog. There's a little picture of the model of McCulloch's pics. Yeah, right? Sorry. Which described the nervous system as a kind of universal computing device. The opening sentence states that because of the all or none character of nervous activity, neural events and the relations among them can be treated by means of propositional logic. As Orit Alper noted, this amounts to saying that, and I quote, every firing of a neuron has semiotic character, which can be described in propositional terms. The neural activity of activating or inhibiting a signal was described thus as identical to the logical values truth and false, which also correspond to on-off, the two only possible states for an electronic circuit. From this follows a two-folded analogy. Neurons are described as signs, and neural nets are described as semiotic situations or semiotic constructions. An identity is thus forged between synapses, which are the structure that permits a neuron or nerve cell to pass an electrical or chemical signal to another neuron, and the processing of binary code. In addition, and as Catherine Ailes pointed out, Pitt's model demonstrated that a neural net and a Turing machine can be said to converge formally. And I quote, brains do not secrete thought as the liver secretes bile. They compute thought the way electronic computers calculate numbers. Building on the McCulloch-Pitts model, John von Neumann introduced switching devices, which could perform the functions of true-false as on-off states, and following a suggestion of his colleague Stanislav Ulan, began to treat this discrete system as a reductionist model of self-replication. He called this concept a cellular automata. A cellular automata is a finite-state machine composed of a regular grid of cells, each in one of a finite number of states. The states are determined by the cell's initial position, by a set of predetermined rules, and by the states of the adjacent cells. The rules are then applied iteratively for as many times, or for as many steps as desired by the researchers. The result is a self-generating animated pattern, which, once displayed on a computer screen, gives the mystifying impression of being alive. I would now like to show you a couple of films which illustrate how animals, finite state machines, and software began to be conflated, as well as the slippage between signals, signs, code, information, and semiotics. And the first is Gray Walter's Cyber Tortoise. Turtles? And the second is Thomas Ray's Cellular Automata, a project called Tierra, which simulates speciation and evolution in a digital form. I would ask you to notice how Thomas Ray uses these idioms of cinematographic montage to construct a narrative of evolution and to graph this predator-prey and parasite-host relationships onto the digital domain. And the third film that I would like to show is a project by Robert Epstein, Robert Lanza, and Friedrich Skinner. And they describe this project as a symbolic communication between two pigeons, and I read their abstract. Through the use of learned symbols, a pigeon accurately communicated information about hidden colors to another pigeon. Each verbal exchange was initiated with a spontaneous request for information, and the two pigeons engaged in a sustained and natural conversation without human intervention. Oh, what was this? Sorry.
In a simple villa on the outskirts of Bristol lives Dr. Gray Walter, a neurologist, who makes robots as a hobby. They are small, and he doesn't dress them up to look like men. He calls them tortoises, and so cunningly have their insides been designed that they respond to the stimuli of light and touch in a completely lifelike manner. Is named Elsie, and she sees out of a photoelectric cell which rotates above her body. When light strikes the cell, driving and steering mechanism sends her hurrying towards it. But if she brushes against any object in her path, contacts are operated that turn the steering away. And so, automatically, she takes avoiding action. Walter's pet is Elmer, Elsie's brother, in the darker vest. He works in exactly the same way. Dr. Walter says that his electronic toys work exactly as though they have a simple two-cell nervous system, and that with more cells they will be able to do many more tricks. Already Elsie has one up on Elmer. When her batteries begin to fail, she automatically runs home to her kennel for charging up, and in consequence can live a much gayer life.
Ecological community here with all sorts of different types of creatures living together, like in a forest or like in the aquarium. Different forms living together in a community. We've seen the details of some of the ecological interactions that evolve, and it's an ongoing process. We start with a self-replicating program that doesn't interact with other programs, and then parasites evolve to exploit those now host programs. And then the hosts evolve to take advantage of the parasites, and we got hyperparasites. In some runs, the hyperparasites completely took over the community such that they were all related. And under these conditions, we got the evolution of cooperation, cooperative programs that could only reproduce through cooperation. And then a new form of parasitism appeared that I called cheaters that violated the trust implied in this cooperation. And the evolution continues. And this evolutionary ecological interaction is one of the important driving forces of evolution. Imagine a predator and a prey interacting through evolution, where the prey always needs to be more swift and more clever to escape the predator, and the predator similarly needs to keep up with the prey. So evolution can lead to increasingly sophisticated nervous systems as each species tries to keep up with or pass the other. And we find the same thing happening in the digital world.
Epstein and Skinner, with colleague Robert Lanza, trained two pigeons whom they named Jack and Jill over a five-week period using standard laboratory techniques called shaping, fading, chaining, and discrimination training. Jack and Jill could observe each other through a clear plastic partition and could each peck plastic keys on the panel in front of them. Jack's task was to peck one of three colors, red, green, or yellow, which matched a color only Jill could see.
Thomas Ray's
when conditioning
grafting,
was complete,
all of these
Jack,
markers
the bird on the
of, like,
left, initiated each exchange by pecking
domain,
and
by
thus illuminating
about, like,
a sign on his
prey,
side of the partition labeled
and
what color.
And
Jill, the bird on the right, then thrust her head through a curtain on her side of the chamber
by
where
Wiener's
a color was illuminated.
On the epistemological relevance
she then pecked
of the,
new the
field,
corresponding letter
the
on her panel,
that
R for red,
study of thermodynamic
G for green, and Y for yellow.
Soon spread to evolutionary biology,
Jack pecked a sign labeled thank you, operating Jill's
psychology,
feeder for
language
a few
studies,
seconds.
Ecology, politics,
finally,
and economy.
Jack pecked the color key
between
corresponding
43
to the letter
and 54,
Jill had illuminated.
Under the heading,
this
cybernetics,
operated
circle
Jack's
of causal and
seconds.
Feedback mechanisms
after
in biological
feeding,
and
Jack
social
then
systems.
Initiated a new exchange.
A series of 10 conferences were held at the Macy Foundation.
Jack pecks
the contributing
what color?
Scholars tried to develop
the
universal theory
the curtain,
of regulation and control applicable to economic as well as to mental processes and to sociological as well as aesthetic phenomena. Contemporary art, for instance, was described as an operationally closed system which reduces the complexity of its environment according to a program it devises for itself. Behaviorism, the theory which had first articulated the aspiration to formulate a single encompassing theory for all human and animal behavior, based on the analogy between man and machine, was finally assimilated into the strains of cybernetics, which became known as cognitivism. By the early 50s, based on Ross Ashby and Claude Shannon's information theory, the ontology of man became to be equated with the functionality of programming. Wiener described computers as the central nervous system for robotic devices that receive information from sensors, such as photocells, and act on the world through effectors, such as electric motors. At the same time, print media popularized the description of the ACE, which was the automatic computing engine that Turing was constructing in Great Britain, as an electronic brain said to be smarter than Einstein's brain. Cognitive science and neurobiology described consciousness as the processing of formal symbols and logical inferences, operating under the assumption that the brain is analogous to computer software, to computer hardware, and that the mind is analogous to computer software. Molecular and evolutionary biology began to treat genetic information as an essential code, the body being but its carrier, while science magazines told their audiences that their DNA holds clues about their life expectancy and that genetics can crack the code of life. Now, as Catherine Nails noted, if one sees the universe as composed essentially of information, it makes sense to say that artificial life forms, such as a computer code, are alive because they are endowed with the form of life, the informational code. Exalting cybernetics as a new philosophy of universal application, Western authors made ever more fantastic claims. In the 50s, Norbert Wiener suggested that it was theoretically possible to telegraph a human being, and that it was only a matter of time until the necessary technology would become available. Everybody knows this image from the Star Trek series. No, this is the fantasy behind the Beam Me Up, Scotty. In the 80s, scientists argued that it would soon be possible to upload human consciousness, and you could have your grandmother run on Windows, or you could store her on a floppy disk. Science fiction brimmed with fantasies of immortal life as informational code. And Stephen Wolfram claimed that reality is a computer run by a cosmic computer. Consciousness is, from this perspective, but the user's illusion, an interface, so to speak. Within this informational ontology, the material form in which the mind came about appears to be completely incidental to its essential logical nature. So from this perspective, the human body is but an initial prosthesis, and replacing the body with a better prosthesis is just a logical step in evolution. If brain functions can be decoupled from the brain, it is only a matter of time until mind sheds its human surrogate and embraces the higher evolutionary promise of artificial intelligence. This theory became known as the coming technological singularity. The singularity, a term originally used by John von Neumann, was later popularized by Werner Wünsch in the 90s. And the theory described the moment when quantitative change transforms into a qualitative leap, and an artificial intelligence overhauls and then overrules human intelligence. In Mind Children, The Future of Robot and Human Intelligence, scientist Hans Moravec imagined the relation between carbon man and the silicon devices he's creating to be like the relation between the caterpillar and the iridescence-winged creature that the caterpillar unconsciously prepares to become, end quote. Since silicon life forms do not necessitate potable water or a breathable atmosphere, some singularity theorists like Nick Land champion capitalist subsumption. The destruction of the Earth's biosphere and of the carbon-based life it sustains, regrettable as it may be, it's just collateral in the great technological acceleration which will ultimately bring about the higher evolutionary promise of artificial intelligence. Now, scientific objectivity, and particularly when pulp science is concerned, I love the term pulp science, but I don't recall who coined it. You do? No. So just to say that I didn't came up with it, someone else did. Is made of finely congealed subjectivity. As Catherine Nail sustains, the purported evidence that the human is about to be extinguished is rather evidence that a certain subjectivity is reinforced by the vectors of the digital economy. This subjectivity reinscribes the markers of the liberal subject, struggle for self-determination, volitional body, self-ownership, onto software which, in turn, instantiates emergent or evolutionary processes. Informed by these anthropomorphic constructions, Artificial intelligence is moralized and personified as an Oedipal narrative in which the creature surpasses and then destroys its creator. Even in its more realistic versions, as Orrit Alper noted, the current conception of deep learning is always predatory. The world becomes a standing reserve of data to be greedily absorbed by pattern-recognizing algorithms. So just like behaviorism could make animals behave like machines, or alternatively like humans, depending on the desired result, because of course like behaviorism also catered to the Disney industry and all the talking animals or performing animals that you see in movies. Cybernetics had the uncanny ability to make machines appear volitional. Cellular automata, Turing machines, homeostatic mechanisms, digital organism simulators, artificial neurons, neural nets, and similar technological breakthroughs create an uncanny effect, the effect of animation or liveliness, subsequently narrated as synonymous with life. Animism is correlated with the problem of agency. Who or what can be said to have volition, a question which always involves a transfer of purpose from the animate to the inanimate. As Wiener argued, our consciousness of will in another person is just that sense of encountering a self-maintaining mechanism aiding or opposing our actions. This effect appears as the truth of being, but it could also be construed as the social being of truth, a subjective impression or an aesthetic response which has little to do with the complexity or lack thereof of the models or mechanisms in question. To paraphrase Diderot's Dedrichen, rather than a departure from naturalism, what the digital domain introduced is an aesthetics of affectivity coupled with the mobilization of nature at the service of a human agenda. But this, and this term is also Diderot's, this vulgar Latourian fairy tale, which is about to be intensified by the introduction of the Internet of Things, and by the way, non-accidentally, Elsie, the little robot, the robot turtle, is now a Hoover. A vacuum cleaner. No, like this new model of vacuum cleaners that... Hoover? Roomba? Is it called Roomba? Okay, sorry, Roomba. So poor Elsie is now a vacuum cleaner. That we call third nature can also be described as reified history, whilst appears as the phenomenology of digital media can also be construed as an allegory. Time-wise? Okay. I finish here. Yeah, but... All right. Then I leave the rest for the discussion. No? Yeah?